coming up on This Week in Radio Tech. What's the state of broadcasting now that we've been in these COVID lockdowns for months? Well, Chris Tobin gives us a report from New York at what the New York City stations are doing, how they're still doing some outside broadcasts, and doing other things online that are giving them more exposure and more revenue streams. Plus, Greg Dahl joins us with a really big thing. In fact, it's called The Next Big Thing. That's next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Angry Audio. Audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, keeping you connected with your community with support and webinars, online at nautel.com/webinars. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we're talking about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the used to be at the top of the tower right there. I'm Kirk Harnack. So delighted to be here and glad that you could join us. Thank you so much. And thank you for joining us whenever you can. By the way, if you got YouTube, and you know, everybody has YouTube, you type in youtube.com and you sign in, you know, with your email account, go to This Week in Radio Tech from the GFQ network and please subscribe. And hit the little bell to get notified. And that way you'll get notified when a new episode is posted. So if you can't always watch us live, that's fine. I almost never get to watch or listen to podcasts live. I always listen to them later on and sometimes even download them. But please do that on YouTube. Find us at YouTube and there's links in the show notes. And subscribe. That'd be really great if you would. It helps us out a lot. And if you comment on the episode, that's nice too. We read those and we get those comments. All right. So I'm Kirk. I am in the Nashville studio, the Telos Alliance studio for This Week in Radio Tech. A big shout out and thanks to my employer, the Telos Alliance, for providing me some time on Thursdays and some of the gear that's here in the studio. And that's why we call it the Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville, Tennessee. Now, Chris, oh my goodness, where in the world is Chris Tobin? Chris, welcome into the show. How you doing, buddy?
Thank you, Kirk. I am actually at a friend of mine's warehouse, engineering warehouse. They do a lot of work for broadcasters in the New York City, Philadelphia, Washington, and a couple of parts around the country. And I'm just getting some equipment, picking up some gear. So it's been good. So I spent the day here, and it's been fun. So I'm in New Jersey, a place called DSIRF Engineering. So if you need some engineering work done, give them a call. They're more than happy to work with you and go from there.
You know, I don't know a lot about DSI. You've mentioned them before, but I see DSI mentioned with typically big, important, can't-fail projects in the Northeast. Is that what they do?
Yes, yes. There's several projects they're involved in, and World Trade Center is one of them and a few others. So, yes, that's the kind of projects.
Wow. Well, good deal. Well, Chris, we've got an interesting show today where we're going to be talking about on the ground, boots on the ground, what's happening in the New York City area. I've got some questions. You've got some answers. I got a little bit of perspective on this from my end. But we're also going to talk about trade shows and engineering seminars and things like that. And not just the fact that, okay, this is canceled, this is postponed, this is canceled, that's canceled, but how we're making up for it. And is the way that we're making up for it maybe as good? Maybe there's some really good things coming out of this that we're going to continue on in the future. I don't mean we as far as TWRT, but I mean the industry. And working with a rather large employer, the Telos Alliance, I've got some interesting perspectives on what we're doing there too, and some new collaborations that have been coming along with getting information out there. I think I think there's good things about this. I'm, you know, not happy about all the lockdowns, not good for business in any kind of way. It's bad for people in a lot of ways. You know, understand the reasons for doing so, but we're going to be talking about that. Plus, I've got an interview coming up with Greg Dahl. Greg has put together this thing called The Next Best Thing, a media tour. And I'm going to kind of keep that under wraps until halfway through the show when we're going to talk to Greg Dahl about this. But he's put together this thing that's absolutely amazing, and it's coming to a city maybe near you. They're going to make about 40 stops across the USA. So we'll be talking to Greg about that. Hey, Chris, right now we want to talk about Nautel and what they're doing. I mean, every single week they're cranking out a new roundtable discussion, and these are pretty fun. So next week's, that's next Tuesday, the Transmission Talk Tuesday roundtable is about a subject that I know is near and dear to Chris's heart because it's project planning, and it involves, well, I was looking through this thing from Nautel, And it's got this picture right here. Will your 20 kilowatt transmitter fit in this elevator? Now, I got to tell you, being kind of a being a rural radio station guy, I've never personally had to fit a transmitter into an elevator ever. But, Chris, this is something that you've had to do and plan for, right?
Yes. You come to New York City, and I can tell you certain transmitters will not be coming through an elevator. But we will get them up through the roof to a certain level, and we hoist them in through a hatchway. I actually removed the TV transmitter about 6 months ago. Did not go into the elevator. We opened up the hatches, opened through the rooftop, and hoisted it down with the chains to the second level roof where the freight elevator was the right size, and off it went.
Oh,
several hundred pounds, five people, and a lot of fun watching this thing swing in the wind as we're lowering it down one flight. So it was on top of a skyscraper in New York City. It was good. It was good.
Well,
so, there are a lot of things you don't realize in New York City, even Chicago, Boston, Philadelphia. Not every elevator fits the box that you like. So you have to be really, really smart about what you buy.
Well, and not just elevators, but a lot of other topics about project planning from Nautel are coming up. And this isn't a one-way webinar. This is an actual roundtable. So people like you and me and Chris and everybody, you can participate in this roundtable. So it's a really great thing they're doing. They've got this down to a good science. Whether you're putting in a single transmitter or replacing a fleet of them, every project has steps that can be followed to make the project more efficient and less painful for everyone. In this upcoming session, this coming Tuesday, we're discussing various aspects and tools used by folks who spend a lot of time figuring out the least painful way to get from point A, that is transmitter not installed, to point B, that is transmitter installed. Now, here's the guest. Gary Cavell of Cavell Merchant Associates is going to be there. And oh my goodness, he's been on more transmitter installations than me and Chris combined times 10, probably. Gary's got a lot of experience in getting this kind of thing done. You can join in and share your tips and ideas on the best way to ensure any project goes as smoothly as possible. Here's what you do. Go register right now at nautel.com/webinars. You can do that while you're still watching our show. So go to nautel.com/webinars. And register for Transmission Talk Tuesday. Chris, I've been invited to speak at Transmission Talk Tuesday in a couple of weeks. So I may you may see me on there.
Oh, good. I look forward to it. The Nautel webinars are really good. They're a smart way to learn more about what you already do and open your mind to opportunities and out-of-the-box thinking. It's really good. And I think Nautel has hit on something that makes sense, and I look forward to seeing it continuing beyond this interesting time we live in, as the phrase goes nowadays. So, yeah, I think from an educational standpoint, professional education, definitely the way to go. And I believe more companies should look at doing it that way, but with more of a friendlier flair than some of the other broadcast organizations have done their versions of webinars. I think Nortel's approach has been more friendly, open-minded. People are willing to actually, I think, ask questions that you normally probably wouldn't do for some of the other manufacturers who've done webinars that have been very, you know, very structured. It's got a certain style to it. You know, that's it.
Yeah, and I hear you, and it cuts either way. There may be advantages some over the other, but the way Nautel is doing it is a big advantage. By the way, you may have gotten an email recently from Nautel to download an ebook, 9 Mistakes to Avoid When Buying a Transmitter. And I got to tell you, this is a terrific book, ebook, but Nautel, I think you've actually mistitled this just a little bit, because this ebook is a lot about the project planning that they're going to be talking about this coming Tuesday. Because a lot of the items that in project planning are exactly what's in here, like planning for future maintenance. Have you ever installed a transmitter, or you probably haven't, I probably haven't, but have you ever gone to a transmitter site and you need to pull out maybe the power supply cabinet from the transmitter and realize that the back of the building is too close and you can't pull it out? That's the kind of planning they're talking about.
Yeah, yep, exactly. I've been there, done it. It's been interesting. 400-pound power supply trying to be pulled out, and you're like, wow, look at that. We just hit the wall. Now what?
Yeah.
I don't know. I got to come up. Hey, you know, there's a little winch here. Let's work on the winch. Yeah, yeah. Done it, been there.
And it's kind of hard. If we could just move the transmitter forward 2 inches, but wait, we've got plumbing overhead that's fixed length, and, you know, Nautel.com/webinars is where you want to go to register for that. Okay, Chris, thanks a lot, Nautel, for letting us talk about that and getting us to do so and getting some turnout there for you. Chris, so how have things been different? And I want to ask about New York. You live in New York City. You work both in the city and in the surrounding area. I'm curious about a few things that New York radio is pretty famous for, and other big cities are too, and I guess a fair number of small and medium market broadcasters. But in a big city, you've got a lot of opportunities for things like audience interaction. And a lot of times that has been, you know, with in-person live remote broadcasts or outside broadcasts, as they're called sometimes. What kind of audience interaction are stations in New York City doing nowadays? Is it all just phone calls and Skype and things like that? Or what? How are stations, how are morning shows, for example, talking to people? Is it what I would think, phone calls or what?
Well, yeah, I mean, the morning shows in New York City have been traditionally always phone interaction as part of the elements for the program. And, you know, what has gone sideways is the ability to be on site on those off, you know, outside broadcast remotes. So that at the moment is somewhat curtailed. But broadcasters here in New York City are doing very well interacting with the audience, both through web-based broadcasts and interactions. You know, several stations have done virtual, I'll call it virtual, you know, concerts if you want, or virtual pop-up music sessions. And their artists are working with the announcer or the DJ, and then they interact with the audience through chat. And it's been pretty interesting in some of them. As a matter of fact, the station I work for, we just did two of them in the last month, and the response from the audience was way beyond what anybody thought. So we're going to be doing some more of that. And we're actually looking at it as a way of revenue stream. And that's one of the reasons why I'm here today at this building getting some equipment, because I need to now build small little video machines that can stream stuff. I'm not, you know, I'm dedicating video streamers rather than one machine and try to do everything on one box. So it's been interesting.
I want to come back to that topic of video. That's really interesting that's taken off. You've been involved with that pretty heavily and been a promoter of that. Let's come back to that. Tell me about, are there any live outside broadcasts going on?
I'm not aware of any outright, but I know folks have been on the street a few times doing things. So yeah, you can do it. There are ways to do it. I mean, the TV folks are doing reporting on the street with no problem. Radio stations. There's been a few radio folks on the street because I've walked around town and go, oh, look, I know who that is. And I know those call letters on that mic flag. Okay. And I just keep my distance to avoid being like, oh, who's standing around you? But yeah, people are doing it. It's not impossible. You really have to start thinking like we used to do back in the day, way, way back in the day, where you got real creative. You know, back in the 60s, 70s, even the 80s, a lot of programmers would come up with some wacky, harebrained things to do. And at the time, technology wasn't even available to do it. But somehow we managed to make it happen. The audience enjoyed it, and the ratings showed it. So fast forward to today, now you have technology that makes it even easier to do stuff that could be wacky. So I think in some respects, the silver lining to this whole health incident is going to help the business model. I'm sure those that are in high debt service broadcast groups probably can't afford to even think out of the box, but you may have to start doing that. Otherwise, those of us who are doing well and have ways of moving very nimbly are expanding and enjoying the I'll call it the web element of broadcasting.
So sometimes I look at the New York Times Square 4K webcam. I don't have it up right now, but sometimes I do on the big screen here.
I love
it's kind
webcam.
Of fun to watch. And there's definitely an increase in traffic. In fact, I just saw some social media posts about people saying like, hey, I'm walking around New York City today. And I wouldn't say it's back to normal, but it's, you know, there's traffic now. So yes. my question is, what has happened to traffic reporting, which is, you know, big in cities and including New York City? What's happened to that? And is it coming back or was it ever gone?
It was never gone. Granted, a lot of the reports were basically no traffic to report. Everything is moving around along. There are green lines on the map, no red or yellow. But the reporting has always been there. And it's getting back to where it's been, where there are delays on the BQE and the Belt Parkway and Henry Hudson River Parkway, George Washington Bridge. All the usual spots are now suffering from traffic jams. Matter of fact, last night I was having dinner at an outside dining in Lower Manhattan, and the traffic from the Holland Tunnel was backed up for 6 blocks, which is particularly very typical at that time of day. So it's back to almost not normal, but close to it. Oddly enough, though, a lot of the offices around the place where the traffic is becoming congested, there's nobody in the offices. So I'm not sure where these people are coming from.
Wow. Hey, I've noticed that it looks like my video is getting slow and nasty here. So I'll tell you what, I'm going to, Chris, give you a couple more things to chat about, and I'm going to hang up and possibly reboot and be right back with you. So what I was curious about, going back to our topic before about video, and you know, you work at a station that's pretty hot on video. What are the commercial broadcasters doing in terms of video? And actually, my video doesn't look so bad now, so I'm gonna stick with you here. What's happening? What are people finding out in terms of the importance of video? How is that helping them? And is that usage transferable to smaller markets, or is this something that only markets the size of New York, Chicago, LA, Dallas, Atlanta can really make use of? What do you think?
Well, first thing is the video can be used by any size market or any size station. It is not relegated to just New York City, Philly, Boston, LA, or San Francisco. The video element, as I've talked about in the past, and I'm working with my programming and membership folks at our place, it's about telling the story. And if you can tell the story with pictures, which there's no reason why you can't, then you have it. That's all it takes. The trick is the story. And a lot of radio stations just do a cookie cutter approach. They say, well, we just do it like we do on the radio. No, you can't. The radio storytelling is not the same as putting a camera in front of something to tell a story. So you have to learn how to tell it through video, through pictures. And that's what we've been doing at my radio station, working with musicians. And the last two events we did were virtual. So we had the musicians on their video stream coming in to us. And then we had our two hosts mixed in with them. And then we played music from their CD release they were having that week. And then we had chat. We had members only sign in to the entire event. And we had something like 600 people connect. And a lot of questions. It was 1 hour. That's it. Nothing crazy. And it was successful. And we said, well, let's try it again. Let's do it a second time. See what happens. Lightning strikes twice, you know, as the saying goes. Turns out we had about 485. So and the best part is after the event, the emails that were coming in saying people would love to see more of this. Then you say, well, what's the point? It's just an artist in front of a camera. We could do that with, you know, Britney Spears. What's the big deal? The big deal was we were talking to the artists about stuff you can't get anywhere else except from the artist's lips. So it was unique. There was value to it. And there was members only. And by the way, did I mention that the CD release wasn't for another day? So they were getting a sneak peek at the new CD. You know what you have to do? Here's what you need to do. For those of you in the audience who don't understand how storytelling works, go to paulharvey.com. Download Paul Harvey. If you have to pay for it, do it. It's worth it. And sit back and listen to how he tells a story. Then you figure out the element of the video, and you've got yourself a success. We're turning our videos into revenue. It's slow going, and it's starting to work. So I would say any station can do it. And if you have a larger budget, it's easier. The trick is, can you tell the story? Just remember that. And you listen to some of Paul Harvey's, and you're going to be fascinated by some of the people that are well-known and famous that we all talk about every day at the dinner table and how they got started. And when he tells it the way he does, you'll never forget it. Walt Disney's one of them. That's all I'm going to say.
You know, one thing I sure have noticed is that TV stations are using social media, cut-ins, to promote what's coming up on their next newscast. They really want your eyeballs on the newscast or to the website, but the newscast is even better. And back when I was doing a lot of TV weather, we were doing a lot of Facebook Lives just to bring people up. Hey, don't know if you have time to join us on tonight's 6 p.m. news or the news at 10 p.m., whatever it is. Here's a quick update on our forecast. Here's what's happening over the next couple of hours. Tune in tonight. We've got the forecast for tomorrow, the 7-day forecast, and what you'll need to know to decide what to wear tomorrow. So we do these cut-ins. And of course, if there was bad weather, if there was going to be snow, the possibility of a snow day or the possibility of damaging winds, hail, tornadoes, man, even little old me doing this on a weekend weather show, I would often, it would just spike up to 200, 300, 400, 500, 600 viewers like that on the Facebook Live. Now, I was doing it on the TV station's Facebook page, so they had a lot of people tuned into that. But my point is this, people walking around with social media apps on their phone, it alerts them. And that's something that if a TV station or a radio station has an app that could alert people as well. Hey, we're interviewing Bruce Springsteen. We're talking about his tour coming up or album release or whatever. That's going to drive people there. So it seems to me like, you know, radio and television haven't had ways to tap people on the shoulder and say, hey, tune in right now.
Right.
And with social media, we have that. And then with, and of course, video is part of that. You don't, you, I mean, there's no, hardly any social media that's audio only. Yeah, I know there's SoundCloud, but I mean, it just doesn't get the response that, that a video gets. So what I'm getting at is it seems this is pretty important for radio and TV stations to do. And a lot of them are doing it now, more TV than radio. And what I'm getting around to asking you is what can a radio station do with the staff that they have versus how many extra people does it take to do the kind of video that you guys are doing, which is actually turning into a revenue stream for you?
Well, I can tell you that when we first started out before the medical chaos came about, I was pretty much the person doing all the camera work, lighting, set design for our videos that were considered proof of concept that I worked on. Then we expanded to a production guy who is our editor. He did editing before he came to the radio station, so he's familiar with video editing. So between the two of us, we came up with a system of how we would work it. So those of you who do video know exactly what I'm going to talk about. And that is the camera shots, the camera angles, the edits that he would need to work with. So he would explain to me, goes, okay, here's what I need. This is the kind of angle. Here's what's going on. If the artist is doing this, if this is going on, wide shot, I mean, medium shot, close up. Give me some motion coming in, motion coming out. Let's do this. So he did like a storyboard. It was like a rough storyboard in my head. So we started practicing this. And before you know it, I started to come up with angles at work. And I got creative. We got really wacky with some gimbals and moving cameras around on a floating gimbal. It was pretty cool. And he was able to edit faster, which means there's less time in the studio, which means we could turn around quicker. And the membership and our underwriting department was able to get it sponsored quicker. So it all worked out. So if you're a station with a small staff, before you panic and do the cookie cutter, I need to build a TV studio. What do we do and spend $40,000 for nothing? Look at the staff, talk to everyone and say, hey, are you familiar, interested? Would you like to try this? And start small. The cameras today you can buy. You don't have to buy a $40,000 Panasonic, Sony, Hitachi, Ikigami. You can buy a very good prosumer with good quality chips and good quality signal noise and go from there. And then the lighting. Lighting can be done very easily, very simple, as long as you understand white balance, color temperature, shadows. Those are a few things. It doesn't require a lot. I work with a staff of 3 people, and we've produced over 300 videos in the last 2 years. And I challenge anybody to look at it and go, oh, my God, you know, where did you guys shoot this? Was this at a studio set? This looks like, No. We all sat down and said, what do we need to do to accomplish this? The image, our videos, okay, again, it's special to what you do. Our videos at our radio station, it's a jazz format, so the image, the lighting, the look is a jazz club or a club scene. So you may be a station of spoken word. That may not be the case for you. Or maybe you're a rock station that may need a little more light in the room than normal. Or, you know, you have to look at it for that. And then once you understand that, you tell the story through the pictures. And that's what we've been doing. I mean, if you look at our website and look at those videos, some of the artists that you have there, you'll recognize from the Kennedy Center and a few other places that they performed. And you'll be like, whoa. And it's just an art performance face. You look at if you saw our performance face with the lights on, you'd be like, what the devil? How'd you guys do that without this green screen? No green screens, no blue screens, nothing.
Wow. All right. And you know, there are more and more tools to produce video programs with multiple cameras out there. There's software tools. This very show is produced with one of those. There are hardware tools like the ATEM Mini Pro, yes. That little thing.
Yes.
Yeah. So there's more and more tools becoming available. There's one that even
that speaking of the tools and that kind of stuff is the next level up. If you're doing it live, if you're doing it in tape, I'll call it just live to tape. Start simple with fixed camera positions and then one or two floaters and build the editing. The key is how you edit the video. Now, if you're doing a live stuff, like we do several live, we have two shows we do live every month for public affairs. So there's live cameras in that one, and we do use switching software like the one we have for Twirt. So that's that second level. We've done a couple of holiday live to Facebook events with musicians in the studio, so it did require switching. But that's our next level. So if you want to get started, get your toe in the pool, go with 3 fixed cameras, 1 mobile or portable, and come up with a plan. And you'll start to realize, wow, we can do that. And then if you have a good editor, a person understands edits, then that person and the camera people work together. And all of a sudden, before you know it, in about 6 months, you start producing stuff just top ahead. You're like, hey, we can do this easy. That's the trick. Once you get to that, then it just becomes, wow, what else can we do? And before you know it, you start trying things out. You're like, wow, this is great. But that's what's missing. I mean, I have talked to several people, have called me up a couple of times. Like, we saw the video of so-and-so and that guy. How did you get him the Hammond organ, the way it looked, and his key shots, and the Steinway piano he was playing? The view was unbelievable. I said, well, the overhead shot that you saw, which is a Busby Berkeley attempt, and it worked well, was actually a Atlas mic stand, one of the old type huge boom mic stands with a clamp on the top of it and a Panasonic prosumer camera pointing down. And I balanced the light and I positioned the focal length. And I challenge anybody to tell me it wasn't a, you know, $20,000 camera shot with a rig or a jig, and we were pulling it back and forth. It was, and when you just look at the back of the, you know, the making of the video, snapshots I usually do, you'd be like, what? That was it? Yeah, that was it. That was my overhead Busby Berkeley. A shot of the keys, the pianist, and everything looked great. And I had light, side light coming in. It created shadows and contrast, and that's it. So, yes, I think radio stations need to start realizing the radio is storytelling. Now we have a chance to do storytelling plus. You know, there's no reason why you can't do a quick hit, 1 minute Instagram video to tease people. The trick is, like you said, tapping on the shoulder. What we do is we tease people with Instagram, Facebook notes, you know, click hits, say, hey, by the way, we're going to be doing this. Come on out, check it out, you know, be part of what we're doing. And then we bring them into the bigger fold. And that's how you start to build up on your revenue. That's how you start to pay back the cost of doing this. It does work. It's slow. It is not an overnight success. Whatever you think. If you're thinking, well, we can do this in 4 days and we'll be making $50,000 a hit. You know what? Take the Kool-Aid, toss it in the drain, and go sell hot dogs, because that's not going to happen. Okay? That's not happening.
Well, speaking of doing these video and audio remotes from wherever you need to do it, Chris, I want to chat for a second about Max Connect Wireless. You've heard us talk about this, and Chris, I know you've got a friend who, I guess during non-pandemic times, produces plenty of video and live broadcasts with Max Connect to get to the internet to do live streaming. This looks like it's a cradle point 4G LTE modem, but it's not your ordinary service. What makes the difference are the SIM cards inside. And our friend Josh Bone at Bone Broadcast saw a need to go to the wireless companies and say, hey, we have customers that need a higher level of service, that need to get, not, you know, speed isn't the ultimate thing here. We don't need 50 megabits per second. What we need is for every packet to get through. What we need is a guaranteed fixed IP connection on the box so that we can remotely get to it. What we need is for a higher quality of service, fixed IP address, and this thing just to stay on and work. And that's what Max Connect Wireless has arranged for you. Now, Chris has used this plenty of times when he's live on remote, and I've used this as well. We've used this for SBE national meetings. We won't be using it this year because we're not going to be at our national meeting, at least not live. But Max Connect Wireless is what you want to check out. It's spelled funny. Look at how it's spelled, Max Connect Wireless. And there you go. You can choose your carrier, Verizon, AT&T, T-Mobile. If you're in Canada, there's service available now in Canada as well. And there are literally now hundreds and hundreds of these units, not necessarily Cradle Point modem. There are other brands as well that work fine. And they're at transmitter sites as a backup. They're at transmitter sites as the only way they can access the remote control. Or maybe it's a backup way to access the remote control. Maybe it's a backup for a modem. I'm sorry, for a codec to send audio to it. These are also great on the road. If you want to do, a live broadcast when you can, where you can, this will get you the coverage that you need, and you won't be blocked by all the other users in the area because you get your own special bandwidth with Max Connect Wireless. This is worth checking out. Yes, of course, it's a monthly fee, just like you would pay monthly for a MiFi service or something like that. But your data does get through and you get that fixed IP address. So this is terrific. You can use this with a codec and push to it, you know, remotely push to it because that IP address doesn't change. Please check it out, Max Connect Wireless, and patronize them. Let Josh Bone know that you heard it here and we sent you. I believe in this product. It's really good. Chris does too. And we enjoy the relationship that we have with them. All right, moving on. Chris, let's see what I want to ask you about next. So you are working at a station that doesn't do ad sales. They do underwriting. In this, you know, I got to tell you, my own stations that do ad sales, and we are really down more than 50%. I mean, it is tough. out there right now for ad sales. Interestingly, car dealers are advertising, and there are other categories that are still advertising well. Obviously, restaurants, not so much. They're advertising drive-through service. But in your world where you have underwriting sponsors, is that a bit more stable for you guys?
I wouldn't say it's more stable. We did take a hit, and you know, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. We are definitely rethinking and sharpening our pencils for revenue. But at least I will say that the underwriting is similar to commercials. You know, it's advertising a service, whether it be cars, whether it's a jazz club or a museum. We still have a lot of folks still sponsoring and working with us, and even though you can't go to a museum, actually, I think you can now. I think the museums do allow certain entry. We're seeing a lot of folks coming back because a lot of people are our members are calling out to their favorite places to go and say, hey, you guys open, and they ask, well, did you hear about it? Why do you remember us? And they tell us the radio station. Like, So our underwriters get a phone call from those clients saying, hey, we've been getting calls from our customers or visitors, so we're going to talk about numbers. So it's coming back slowly. But I don't think until outdoor stuff can open up and nobody has a problem, everybody's impacted. Whether you're commercial or non-commercial, you're going to be impacted. So we have to wait and see. But we're making good, and that's why we're doing a lot of virtual music work with the musicians, and we're finding that that is a new, interesting one-on-one approach. And I think a lot of radio stations should start rethinking how they do stuff. Don't just stick a camera in the studio. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. Think about the storytelling and / interaction. And I think you'll find out there's a lot of stuff you haven't even tapped that you can now capitalize on, or I'll call leverage.
Now, for a lot of stations, putting a camera in the studio and streaming that live would be a first step. It's the first thing that they maybe can do. And there are some, I wouldn't call them podcasts, but there are some videos on YouTube that I enjoy. There's some political figures that will make their way into a Washington, D.C. radio studio, and they'll do an on-air on the morning show or the afternoon show once a week, maybe. And sure, I could listen to that, but it comes up conveniently on my YouTube feed because I've subscribed to it, and I get to see it. Now, it ain't a whole lot to look at, but at least it's the same content that this person who I'm interested in was talking about on some DC area radio station. So, it's possible to do that kind of streaming badly, I'm sure, and it's possible to make it a first step. But I agree with what you say, if you can tell a story with it. And these musicians, you mentioned musicians. I guess a lot of musicians, they don't have venues to play in right now, right? So,
well, that's correct. We're working with some to work to open some venues to work in so they can perform, and then we'll do the audience via virtual. I'll call it that. Yes, there are a few places that are actually the public isn't invited, but there are some places that will let the musicians who have worked together perform to do something. So that's what we're working on, and I think that's where there's an untapped resource. It's something that no one thought would even make any sense, but it does now. And we're trying to push it in such a way that the barrier to entry is almost zero. If you're one of our members, you just get a link, you click it, you go, you're in, we're doing our thing for the hour, you're out, done. And we change it to something else for the next time. So you can't just, pass it along. But we're trying to add value. Last week we had Jimmy Heath, and it's just like, wow, before the album came out, which the next day. So everybody loved it. That's what they go for. So same is true for, say, a spoken word station. Like I, for the longest time, BBC Radio 1 or Radio 2 was it? I used to watch a couple of times. They had the camera in the studio, but the only time they really use it is when they're doing interviews. And I was like, now this is the way to do it. So I got a chance to watch them do interviews with a couple of UK actors, and it was great. It was like, perfect storytelling. I knew who the actress was. I enjoyed the movie she was in. I was like, I get this. And the stuff you could get nowhere else. I looked it up. You couldn't find anything else. Perfect. And that's what they do all the time. That's what they have been doing. I don't see that a lot here in the States at times. The stations that do that tend to be the smaller stations that have more intimate relationships, I guess, or work with people in their community. So they get that element of, hey, let's sit down and chat. It's like two guys at a bar talking about their favorite sports. That's really how I always equate it to. You and I are talking about broadcasting, engineering, and then engineers need to be a little artistic. If you're not artistic as an engineer, you you pretty much are just pushing pencils. You're not doing anything. You know, that's two and two is four. That's easy. I know that. But, you know, how two and two and four get there, maybe that's the journey. That's the fun part. And we need to start thinking that way right now, because if you don't, it's going to cost you.
Chris, we're going to pivot just a bit, and in the second half of our show, we're going to talk about the trade shows, and more importantly, I think, or as importantly, certainly, the seminars that different state associations put on for engineering education, and we're also going to talk about manufacturers and their efforts. I got to tell you, at the company that I work for, the Telos Alliance, we're making, you know, big efforts to get information out there, and I think that we're doing it in a way that I got to say, I think it's a higher quality than we would do just for all the prep for NAB. You know, there's so much logistical prep for NAB that we have to focus on just to get, you know, a truckload of equipment out there and set it up and make it work. Whereas now we don't have to worry with all that. We can show demos. We can take questions. We can have actually longer conversations than we typically have at NAB. We got more time for that one-on-one. So we're going to move in that direction. I want to take just a minute here, though, and show from the SBE, they're not going to be having their annual meeting in the fall in New York State this year. But we do have an announcement to make here about R.J. Russell. being the engineer of the year, SB's engineer of the year. This is announced in Radio World just a couple days ago. It was announced there. RJ Russell is SB's engineer of the year, and I've gotten to work a little bit with RJ. Well deserved. Congratulations. This is a hardworking and smart guy, and he deserves every bit of this award from the SBE. Also, Fred Baumgartner is the SBE Educator of the Year, and also so is Roland Robinson. So it's just great to see these gentlemen getting this award from SBE. Congratulations. I want to make sure I gave a shout out and mention to these guys. So coming up in just a minute, we're going to have this interview with Greg Dahl. Since the NAB got canceled, completely canceled, they did a couple of webinars with some of the people who were NAB sponsors. But you might remember there was an NAB roadshow that was done some years ago. And I've been writing his name all day long, and I'm sorry, it's on left the tip of my tongue now. I think it gets mentioned in this interview. But my friend Greg Dahl has put together a traveling tent show. Can you believe that? A traveling tent show for outdoors. So coming up in our next segment, Greg Dahl is going to talk about this traveling show. It's called The Next Best Thing, a Media Tour, and it's the next best thing to being at NAB. And he's bringing a lot of equipment, and a number of equipment manufacturers are going to be along with him. It's all going to be outdoors. It's going to be intense. It's going to be, intense. I don't know if it's going to be intense, but it'll be intense, and they'll set up in large outdoor spaces in 40 different cities. So hang on. Details on that are coming up. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 505. Hey, it's Kirk along with Chris Tobin and, as I said, Greg Dahl coming up. Our show is brought to you in part by our friends at Broadcasters General Store and Henry Engineering. Henry Engineering, you know Henry Engineering. You need to look at their website, because their website has all kinds of cool stuff. But we've been talking about the Henry Superlight. The Henry Superlight LED Tally Light Controller. This little dude is cool because it fits with the times. Maybe you've installed some of the Henry Super Relays back when everything we were controlling was, 110 volts, and we had that on barrier strips. But now so many of our lights and our indicators are LEDs, and the Superlight LED Tally Light Controller is perfect for that. It's a logic and control interface for controlling low-voltage studio tally lights. It can directly power 12-volt DC LED tally lights up to half an amp, or 500 milliamps. Superlight includes a flasher circuit, just like the old Super Relay, as well as a double-pole, double-throw relay output that can be used for any low-voltage switching, speaker muting, or other utility use. The LED output can, as I said, drive half an amp. It can sync up to one amp if used with an external power source. So maybe your LEDs take a little bit over half an amp. You can still get by with this. Just use an external power source. And like I said, you can set it to flash if you like. It also has a control link that goes through it. This is on the RJ45 connectors. So you can actually daisy chain a number of these together for your wiring convenience. And you get to use the convenience of using Cat5 cable and RJ45 connectors. So there's not a bunch of, you know, stripping wires and twisting and you know, getting them to fit under screws and or, you know, crimping spade connectors on. All that's gone. You just crimp an RJ45 on the end of a cable, and now you can set up inside, just open the top off and set up inside which pair of wires that this particular super relay, super light, is going to respond to. So it's a really smart way to make all that work. I think it's just as cool as can be. The Henry Super Light, and you can look at the Henry website, henryeng.com, and check out all the cool things that Henry is making these days. There's more to meet the eye, more than meets the eye. Just go there and look. Feast your eyes, as we say. And all that's available through Broadcasters General Store. So call BGS. BGS.cc is the website, or you give them a call. Their phone number is 352-622-7700 at Broadcasters General Store. I really appreciate BGS. They are working hard to make your life easier as a broadcast engineer. And by the way, BGS is also going to be on this Next Best Thing tour with Greg Dahl. So tell you what, without further ado, let's check out Greg Dahl. Roll it. Hey, welcome in. It's Kirk Harnack, and I'm talking with a good friend, Greg Dahl of Second Opinion Communications. Greg, how you doing? Welcome in.
I'm doing great, and thanks for having me on the show, Kirk.
So, Greg, you're a contract engineer, and with a name like Second Opinion Communications, I can only guess that you don't always get the first call, but you typically get the last.
Yes, that happens more than not.
So, what's the idea behind the name Second Opinion Communications, and how do you help broadcasters?
Well, the company name, you know, way back when we started, you know, you have to register with the state, and we had to continue to pick. Everything that we picked didn't work, and finally came across this one, and the state said, okay, you can have that. So that's where it originated from, and it, of course, the thought was that most times we're getting a call after the fact, after a project started, and helping to fix some issues that were a problem, you know, that someone couldn't fix for them. So Second Opinion kind of fell into it.
I think the state set you on a good course, because I think it's a great name. And it describes oftentimes what happens. A broadcaster will talk to one engineer and maybe not get the best advice. But you are a very well-rounded sort of engineer. And in fact, that's what I want to talk to you about right now, is not so much Second Opinion Communications and the contracting work that you do. You do a lot of work in association with my employer, the TELUS Alliance, because you go out and install AOIP, audio over IP systems, especially those made by Axia. But you've got an adventure you're about to embark on, a road trip. Tell us about what's going on.
Yeah, so back when all the COVID-19 started, you know, we were on a conference call in April, and we're trying to figure out, just like everybody else, what can we do to continue with business and be safe and responsible and all the other things that we were looking for. As you know, a lot of people have ventured into the video, something that you've been doing for many years, but now a lot of the conventions that have postponed or canceled are moving in that direction and such, which works out really good because we get to sit in the luxury of our homes, our offices, and see a video webinar, and we're all safe and happy with that. I wanted to do something more, something different. So the thought was that with the conventions, we always go to the convention. We go to Vegas. We go wherever they are, you know, broadcasters' clinics in Madison, Wisconsin, things like that. And I also remembered 10 years ago or so when Larry Bloomfield came through with a taste of NAB through here where I live in Rockford, Illinois. And I thought, well, what if we kind of reinvent that a little bit? And instead of going inside, we go outside with tents, set up tables with equipment. Ensure that they are sanitized. We are wearing masks. We have sanitation stations, and provide that an environment where you could get to the equipment safely, responsibly, and just go throughout the country, different places, and hit a bunch of towns, and give that opportunity. So from April till now, we've been working toward that. I've taken on a scary venture of purchasing a motorhome, which I needed justification because I wanted that anyway. My wife and I both wanted to get into that. So this gives us a reason to do it. So of course I jumped in both feet, and now it's sitting in the backyard and it's ready to go. We've got a trailer, putting in all the tents, the tables, the equipment. We've been coordinating with everyone that's coming along and doing this. We're around 20 vendors, manufacturers. Some of them are coming along also, keeping the, you know, safety in mind and things like that. They're going to, you know, we're doing three different legs. And the first leg from here in the Chicago area, we're going to go west. And then we're going to loop around and come back the top side of the country, avoiding any problem areas, not trying to cause any conflicts and stuff like that. All we want to do is show the equipment, talk about what, you know, what is new, what is existing, you know, going back to the second opinion type of thing, what type of problems do you have? Well, how can we help you and things like that? So I think it's a great idea, or it's going to be the craziest idea, and we're going to find out starting next week.
I think you're going to have great turnout as you go city to city. What's your first stop? Where are you first setting up?
We are going to St. Louis first.
And what's the date for that show?
Oh, that will be August 10th, this Monday. And we're starting, it's 11 to 2. They've been sending out notices from the local SBE chapter. We're also sending out notices. There's also going to be some social programs going on. And don't ask me where they are right now, because I'm not overly involved with that, and I don't know where they're at. I know they're on Facebook, I know they're on LinkedIn, but I don't know the names of them. We've got to get that out yet, and I guess I'm the wrong person to ask on those, because I don't do social stuff very well.
So you may not have the whole list in front of you, but give me a couple of highlight cities over the next few weeks, and sure. And then we'll talk about how people might I guess they're getting – people who are SBE members are getting notified because you're coordinating this through local SBE chapters, probably the best way to get local engineers. But back to that question, what are a few of the cities you're hitting first? St. Louis, and then what?
St. Louis, we're going to go to Columbia, Missouri, Kansas City, Missouri, Colorado Springs, Colorado, Denver, Colorado. That'll be within the first week. Then we're going to Salt Lake City, Reno, Eugene, Oregon, Portland, and Seattle for the second week. And then we're going to come back in the top of the country. We haven't confirmed a couple of those in that section there, but we're working on that. But, you know, we're hitting across there, we're going to end up in Minneapolis at the end of that week. That will give us 3 weeks, and that's our first leg.
Wow. So your first leg is 3 weeks. Well, if there's any chance to get Nashville on your list, I'm happy to make sure our SBE chapter is extremely well aware that you're going to be here. So, you know, just keep me in mind if you can for legs two or three.
Well, leg two is, it's included in there. We already know where we know where we want to go. We just need to contact the local SBE or contact, you know, some friends in the area to find, because basically what I'm doing is asking for a parking lot. 50 feet by 50 feet, and we'll set the tents up. We're self-contained because the motorhome has a 10 kilowatt generator, so I can, you know, power a small city, I feel, in there. So we're self-contained in that way. The tents, the tables, you know, nothing else there. We're going to provide bottles of water. We're not going to do any real food because of our current situation. You know, because normally with radio, we associate getting together and food. And in this case, we have to be careful, and so I don't really want to put food out there just in case.
Yeah. Well, bring your own sandwich. So the tour is called The Next Best Thing, a media tour. Is it focused on radio, television, or do you have some of both?
We have some of both. So we're trying to cover both sides in there. And that's the exciting part, because I get to see some of the TV stuff that I don't normally get exposed to. I'd like to get more into TV, but, you know, the radio stuff I'm so engaged with. TV is just a little bit different for me. I know in the transmitter, it's, you know, basically the same and things like that, but I just never really gotten into it. And now I'm getting better exposure for it. So I'm learning in there, and that's great.
That is awesome. All right. So what's the best way that people could find out about this? I know you're partnering with several people. One of them is what, Broadcaster General Store, right?
Yeah, Broadcaster General Store, Yellow Tech, some of the other vendors we have in there, Econco. I didn't have a list with me.
So I'm sorry.
Remember that stuff. Dielectric. Interesting story about Dielectric. We received their gear from UPS, and they took a crate and put a filter in it. And when I got the filter, or the crate, I should say, the top's missing. And I'm looking right down at the filter, and I look at the UPS driver and go, the top's missing. Yeah. I'm like, okay. That's a little different. I don't usually get a crate, a small crate, with the top missing. And fortunately, Dielectric had sent a picture of everything that they were sending, and it had a top on it. So for a top of a crate to come off, that takes a lot. And, we ensured that he noted on the delivery that the top was missing just in case there's any equipment missing, which appears it didn't. But how often do you get a crate without a top on it coming from right from the shipper?
Wow. I tell you what. Sometimes customer service is lacking, or care it apparently is lacking. But we've all seen those videos of people's from their Ring video doorbell or their security cameras. Yes. Of a TV being dumped over the fence. But I'm glad it came out okay. But if there was any damage, you could get it solved. But wow. Well, I guess you're going to be handling the gear a little more carefully. Are you in your trailer carrying all the tents and all the display gear, or is the display gear coming along separately?
No, it's all in the trailer. Wow. I have a 12-foot trailer, so the motorhome is 44 feet plus the trailer and the hitch. I'm at 60 feet, and it's like, wow, that's pretty long. I'm as long as a semi-trailer.
All right. St. Louis, the first stop, and that is this coming Monday. Be in touch, folks, with your local SBE chapters, because generally speaking, you're coordinating this through SBE chapters. Is there any one point of contact where a person could see, hey, am I on the list or not? Or how can people best find out about anything more about this tour?
Probably at this time, it's best to contact me directly. And should I just my email address?
Sure. Yeah.
Which is Gregory Dahl at secondopinioncomm.com, all spelled out.
I will put that in the show notes of this episode. Okay.
Thank you.
If you like, I'll not make it. Well, I'll put a space in there somewhere so that spam bots don't pick it up as well.
Okay.
I think they've probably programmed around that by now. But anyway, I'll put that in the show notes, and people can email to you. You ought to put Dave Kirsten on that so that he's responsible for all that.
Yeah, not like he doesn't get enough emails already.
That's right. Greg Dahl, it's been great talking to you. I'm looking forward to the next best thing, a media tour. How many cities altogether do you think you'll have?
Over 40. We are definitely doing over 40.
Wow.
No question about it. Right. And it's easy to get over 40 because this first leg is 15 right there.
Yeah. Hey, so when you come to Nashville, maybe we should do a live remote on This Week in Radio Tech from the event itself.
Yes. Since we do have control of the schedule, we can see if Nashville can be on a Thursday. That would be great.
If it's not, we'll record something. That would be okay. But if it happens to be on Thursday, that'd be great too.
Okay.
Greg Dahl, Second Opinion Communications. We'll put your link in the show notes, and people can ask there about, hey, what about my city? You're going to get a lot of that. But 40 cities.
That's great. That means people are interested.
That's right. Greg Dahl, Second Opinion Communications on This Week in Radio Tech.
Thank you, Kirk.
That's great to talk to Greg, and I'm looking forward. I wish I could drive to St. Louis for the very first one that's coming up next week, but check this thing out. Your local SB chapter should know if your SB chapter is involved with this or not. Chris, I don't know if they're coming to New York, New Jersey, but they got a bunch of cities, and if the first leg is 3 weeks long, I don't know if the second and third legs are the same, but they're going to be on the road for over 3 months, I think, with a motorhome and a trailer full of tents.
Why not? It makes total sense. I think it's great. It's something different. Why not? Let's do something different. Why do we have to do the same old thing? I'm excited. I hope he can schedule something nearby. I'll drive to it.
I've got a feeling that Greg Dahl. And I mean, the guy's amazing. He does great work. He's very meticulous and very thoughtful in his, second opinion communications. Yeah, you get a second opinion, get Greg. But can you imagine the stories he's going to have for his grandkids from this trip? It's going to be amazing.
Jeez. Oh, you know it. It's gonna be a mess. I mean, it's gonna be great.
Hey, there have been, of course, a lot of cancellations of various different shows. Things like the SBE Leadership Development Course, that's been postponed until the spring. The Michigan Association of Broadcasters annual business meeting, that was held virtually. Actually, it's coming up August 11th. The Nebraska Broadcasters Association annual convention, that's been canceled. I know they were working on a virtual thing for engineers. Got to check back and see if that's come together yet. The Alabama Broadcasters Association convention, that's always a big deal. That's been canceled. But they are going to do the Alabama Broadcasters Association is going to do an engineering webinar. Now, Alabama has always invited people from anywhere to come into their engineering seminars at no charge. So they're going to do this as a webinar on August the 18th. I believe that is a Tuesday, a couple weeks from now. Of course, IBC, that's been canceled and no real replacement for that. The NAB radio show that was going to happen right here in my hometown, Nashville, that's gotten canceled. The ABA Engineering Academy Radio Engineering 101 course, you know, I shouldn't say anything. I got to check up on that. There's a little bit of conflicting information on their website. That's, again, Alabama Broadcasters. The Society of Broadcast Engineers, SBE, they have a big annual fall meeting. They do awards. They have an awards dinner. They have they have an actual, you know, meeting where we vote and we set the course. We introduce the new board of directors and things like that. That's all canceled in person. It was going to go up in New York State. They're going to do a virtual meeting now on September 22nd and 23rd, a couple of virtual meetings. So we'll keep you updated on that when the time comes close. And I know I'm involved with some of that information. By the way, if you haven't voted yet, I am in the running. So I wouldn't mind your vote at all. I can't promise you an RJ45 crimper in every toolbox, but I would appreciate your vote. Hey, Chris, we got time for a tip of the week here in just a minute. So if you will stand by with your tip of the week, that would be just awesome. This Week in Radio Tech, episode 505. Episode 505 is brought to you in part by Angry Audio and by Studio Hub. Folks, you hear me talk about almost every week the high quality Studio Hub cable adapters to go from whatever you need, whatever professional connection you've got on your equipment to an RJ45. And of course, you put a Cat5 cable into there and run it over to your AOIP equipment. So, or just to your general wiring scheme. It doesn't have to be AOIP gear. You know, Studio Hub came out with their wiring scheme with using Cat5 cables before there was ever any AOIP equipment. So, you can really do nice studio wiring using Cat5 cables for your audio, whether it's analog audio or AES3 digital audio, or of course, AOIP audio. You can do all that. But right now, they've got a deal going on that you can get a 20% discount on everything Studio Hub. Talk to your dealer. Say, I want that 20% discount that Angry Audio is offering, that Studio Hub is offering, and get your discount. And when you do that, the price of Studio Hub comes down with 20% off. The price of Studio Hub is really no different than the other knockoff brands. And so you can get original quality Studio Hub cable adapters, actually all the Studio Hub gear that you can get at 20% off. So it's quite a deal. You need to go stock up now and get yourself Studio Hub. One other thing to mention, this has been highlighted in Radio World last April, and I think it's very worthwhile. This is the Angry Audio Bluetooth audio gadget. You know, I love this thing because this is an easy way to conveniently get, by the way, it's a no-touch way to get your cell phone into your audio console and your audio console into your cell phone. You can do, use it like a telephone hybrid. Use your cell phone becomes your hybrid and the audio gets in and out of your console with this. It's Bluetooth up here and it's audio connections in the back. There's AES digital and there's analog both. There's also stereo because it can play stereo from your phone. So if you've got some cool songs in your phone and they're only in your phone, You can play them right through here, and you get the high quality mode when you're in the one-way direction. So if you hook your cell phone up and say, hey, I want to play audio, it automatically selects the highest quality mode. Whereas if you are doing a two-way conversation, as using it as a phone hybrid, then it selects the low latency mode. Quality's not as high, but it certainly is as good as any, but better than any POTS line you're going to find. So check that out from Angry Audio, the Bluetooth audio gadget. And remember, 20% off everything Studio Hub. Talk to your dealer about that and get your order placed. And you don't have to put up with the knockoff stuff anymore. Thanks a lot, Angry Audio, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech. And I would appreciate if you will go check that out. All right. Woo! Chris, it's been a nice show. It's been nice to talk to you. That's really been pleasant. And now you're going to talk to me with a tip of the week, aren't you?
Well, a tip of the week will be a very basic one. It's given the conditions we're all operating under and working with. I would say if you're operating a facility that is unstaffed or unmanned, whatever you want to call it, and you're relying on that facility's tech ops center to keep everybody connected to the facility and, you know, workflows are continuing, it's time to check PSs. It's time to check your power source. It's also time to check the generator because, you may not overlook these things while you're in crisis mode, and all of a sudden one day somebody calls and says, I can't connect remotely, or I can't get to the server, I can't do this, and you get yourself out to the studio and you find yourself in the dark. And like, ooh, look at that. So I would say it's time to do a quick check. I've been doing it last couple of months now and discovered a few things about some of my UPSs despite the diagnostics test setup. So I did some pull the plug methods to testing and discovered that even though the diagnostics said the batteries are good, they lasted about 4 minutes. So it wasn't a good thing. So you should check. And also during these times of running around and trying to do multiple things and the spinning dishes on a pole as we all are doing, document, document, document. And do not rely just on your phone or your tablet as the source of information by typing in notes or whatever. Because if the battery fails, the tablet gets smashed, you're in trouble. I say this because 2 days ago, working with somebody, working on a project, they called me and said, I can't do the test with you. I said, why not? My son smashed my tablet and I can't get to the information. I see. Okay. So, it's worth putting it on paper somewhere, just at least, the primary stuff. I'm not saying day-to-day, but just primary information. Best document both electronically and on paper. It's okay. Pens and paper is still a legitimate form of
it is. Yeah. It could be a great philosophical conversation, but we're not going to take the time to do it right now. I have found for my own documentation, yes, there are things that have to be up on the wall, in a notebook, on a notepad, things that you need to reference quickly. Every note that I take, and I build spreadsheets and I build notes, software licenses, for example, lists of IP addresses of my various equipment, whether that's virtual machines or the iDRAC cards on Dell servers, the network attached storage. We just had to discover an IP address yesterday. That was an interesting story. I put all those things into a Google Doc, and I have that shared. It's in my personal Google Docs account, and I have that shared with the station's engineering account so that no matter which account I'm in, I can quickly get it. And there are people at the station, the other owners that have authorization to get into the station's own engineering account. So they can look up anything, especially if we have to reinstall some software, the license codes are right there. If we have to reinstantiate a stream server, the streaming addresses and passwords are all right there. So we don't have to spend a whole lot of time with that. But I'll tell you a story where most everything gets labeled, but we had a network attached storage, unit, Netgear's, ReadyNAS that got stupid yesterday, and we couldn't figure out its IP address. So we got somebody at the radio station to go find the MAC address on the back of the unit. And it was hard to read, but they could make out enough of it. I wrote it down. Then I remoted into the router, and the router has an IP scan function. And so I was able to scan the network. Aha, find that MAC address and go see what its IP address was. Well, as soon as I did that, I went to its IP address and then I bookmarked it. And so now it's bookmarked in Google Chrome. So it means wherever I open Google Chrome anywhere, I've got its IP address right there. Now, I'll probably make a note of it also in Google Docs. But I'm loving, and I can access that, by the way, with a phone, with a tablet, with a computer, anywhere, as long as I can just get into that Google Docs account. I agree that isn't the only place it should be, but being able to log into a PC, go to Gmail or Drive and log in, and I've got all the information I've ever put in there. That's a real benefit for me. What do you think about that? Is that, you still like paper, don't you? Is Chris still there? Did he drop off?
Sorry, no. Yeah, for some reason, oops, there we go. Yeah, there was a momentary drop. Sorry about that.
No, I was just talking about doing it all on Google Drive. So open it up, no matter where I am in the world, can open it up, cell phone, whatever, and I've got that information that I need. I found that to work pretty well for me.
Yeah. Yes, I use the Google Drive, Google Docs on a few things, and it does work. I'm just saying that there are times when you may be somewhere where you may not have access to that electronic tethered information pipe. And, you know, I've had places where I've been recently at 2 o'clock in the morning. It didn't. The internet wasn't available for some reason. So thank God I had a little black book with info.
The bar you frequent doesn't have Wi-Fi?
Oh, they stopped that a long time ago. I bring my own hotspot.
Hey, we got to go, Chris. It's been enjoyable spending this hour with you. I really appreciate it. We do coming up. Yeah, it always is good. Coming up next week, we have an interesting show next week for you. It's Audio Builders Workshop with Chris Kincaid. Now, have you ever heard of Audio Builders Workshop? Chris, you turned me on to this at an AES convention. The Audio Builders Workshop, it's really for kids of all ages, but they help people, I guess typically high school, college students, build their first electronics. And they have just a lot of high-quality microphones to just a whole range of things. Chris Kincaid is heading that project up now. And so we'll be talking to Chris Kincaid with Audio Builders Workshop. I believe I went and ordered a kit that I need to put together with my son. I need to do that this coming week before we do the show next week. So that's what's coming up. Chris, thanks for joining us from New Jersey. I appreciate you.
No problem. Anytime. And
thanks a lot to Suncast for producing the show. I appreciate you. And thanks a lot to Andrew Zarian, the founder of the GFQ Network, where you'll find lots of other excellent podcasts right here. Anything from wrestling to technology. All right, we got to go. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Bye-bye.